Kol Ha'ir.
Yeah, before we start with Kol Ha'ir and B'nai Ha'ir, I just wanted to add something. I found something that's relevant to the Gemara that we had yesterday, which is in the middle of Hayam and Bays. And the Gemara wants to know whether or not you mitargem Maisa Reuven. So the Gemara says that we should not be mitargem the Maisa of Reuven, because the people, when they hear the targum, they'll mistakenly think that, because if you translate the pasuk literally, that Reuven had a relationship with Bilhah. And the Gemara says that that's not what happened at all. But rather, Bilbel Yitzue Aviv. So the idea here is that Rashi says, Chayshina L'Gnuso, meaning we're worried about the Gnus of Reuven. The Ran says, the Chayshina L'Gnuso Shel Yaakov Avinu. Okay. Now, what I found is the following. The pasuk says the following. We should really open up the chumash. We should have a chumash here.
We do.
Okay, that's good.
Two or three.
We'll see if you can find the pasuk inside. Yeah, let me just see if I can save some time here and just open up the chumash here. Gracious Lamed Hay, Pasuk Chaf Beis.
Lamed Hay,
Chaf Beis. Yeah. Vayelech Reuven, Vayishkav es Bilhah Pilegesh Aviv. Let me just borrow this for a second and give it right back. Lamed Hay, Chaf Beis.
It's right on that page.
Yeah. Now, it says the following. Vayhibish kol Yisrael ba'aretzahi, vayelech Reuven, vayishkav es Bilhah pilegesh aviv, vayishma Yisrael, vayu bnei Yaakov shnei masar. So the number of questions here you could ask on this pasuk. For example, what's vayelech Reuven? I mean, could have just said vayishkav Reuven is Bilhah. What's vayelech Reuven? And then what's Vayishma Yisrael? And what's Vayu Bnei Yaakov Shnemasar? I mean, the whole pasuk here is very choppy. So I found something here this is a handout from Rav Olbaum on Pele Yoetz, but again, that's not important. I'm just mentioning it in passing. And he says that there's a Pirush Al HaTorah from Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim is one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, one of the Balei HaTosfos. He says it's also brought down in Tosfos HaSholem, which is what they call the Ziknei Balei HaTosfos Al HaTorah. And I have that here also for you. But let's go through first Rabbeinu Ephraim. It's pretty similar, but I think the Tosfos HaSholem fleshes it out a little bit more. He says, Kach kavonas ha-psukim. Reuven shama. Reuven got the word. Again, how he found that, I don't know. She Yaakov ozav es Lea imo. That after the death of Rachel, Yaakov leaves Leah, V'lokach has Bilha, and he has a relationship with Bilha. Halach Ruvain min Ha'aretz. In other words, it says the following. It says Vayelech Ruvain. So what's Vayelech Ruvain? Halach min Ha'aretz. I guess in a modern parlance, you know, if you would say he checked out. Vayishmar Yisrael. So what's Vayishmar Yisrael? Ki Halach Ruvain min Ha'aretz. So again, what happens is Reuven finds out that Yaakov moves from Leah's tent over to Bilhah's tent. He checks out Reuven. That's it. I'm out of here. Yisrael, meaning Yaakov, finds out. Shaholach Reuven in Oretz. Vishalach Acharov. He adds another piece to the puzzle.
So Vayelech, but then it's Vishkav Bilhah. So it's saying.
The order should be the reverse. It should say Vayishkav Yaakov is Bilhah, and then Vayelech Reuven.
So Vayishkav, that's missing. That's Yaakov Bilhah. So it's
right.
And there's that, and then.
And he says the following: Vayoshav Reuven. So what happens is Yaakov sends after, you know, he sends a messenger, so to speak, after Reuven. Vayoshav Reuven, and Reuven returns.
And now there as well.
And now, Vayim Bnei Yaakov Yudbeis. Now, I'm going to read to you the next paragraph in just one second, but first let's go through the Tosas Shalom. Tosas Shalom says the following: Hachi Midrash Pashtei Dekra. This is the way we interpret the Pasht, the Pshuta Shel Mikra. Vayihi Bishkon Yisrael Ba'aretz Ahi. Right, that's the opening. Four words in this parasha, in this pasuk. Vayish mishkon Yisrael ba'aretz ahi, and then you add umesa Rachel. Notice this pasuk is describing what's going to happen after Rachel dies. Vayelech Reuven. The next part of the pasuk is Vayelech Reuven. Holach ledarko. He goes on his own way. Vilama. Lefisha Reuven Ra es Yaakov and Bilhah ves Elbon Imo. Elbon Imo. He's being toveh the insult of his mother Leah. Velo Ratzel Liros. Again, I'm going to give my take on this. He couldn't tolerate it. It was like too much for him. So it's almost as if a son has a choice. Either he confronts his father, he had a major altercation, or he just, I'm out of here, I can't take it. You know, maybe that's better than well, I don't know, the psychiatrist will have to decide, but maybe that's better than a frontal confrontation. V'lorotza liros, ulefichach holach me'aviv. V'zeu shenema v'yishka, pirash v'yishka v'yakov is bilha. V'shoma Yaakov sheruvein tova elbon imo. V'zeu shekosav v'yishma Yisrael. See, we think Vayishma Yisrael means he found out that Reuven had some sort of relation with Bilhah. No, he finds out, Yaakov, that Reuven was Tovea Elbon Imo, and therefore he checks out, and therefore Reuven packs his bags. V'zeu shekosa Vayishma Yisrael l'chein sholach achar Reuven u'kshechazar etzlo oz hoyu b'nei Yaakov yudbeis. It was almost as if there was a member of the family that, how do they say, ran away from home? You remember that phrase? You know, when you have a child who runs away from home. I mean, it's quite common. But usually, they run around the block, you know, to find them. Sometimes, you know, you have to send the police looking for them. And here, once Reuven left, and he couldn't tolerate his father's decision, at that point, it's Yudal Shvatim. You know, Reuven is like packed out of here. But Yaakov is able to get him back. Aval kodim shebo etzlo, before Reuven returns, lo hoyu el yudal shvatim. Now remember I told you that I was skipping a little paragraph here, so I'm going to go back to this paragraph. This Rabbeinu Ephraim al Torah is quoted in a book called Otzer HaYudios, which I think is Rav Stern over here from, not this Rav Stern, but Rav Stern from what's the name of the Ansatz, what's it called? something Torah. I forgot the name of it. Anyway. So he writes the following. Kosev HaChidah. I mean, the Chidah was one of the greatest Sephardic poskim in the last 500 years since the Beit Yosef. He says, Kosev HaChidah. She'asa Ruvein. Ruvein comes to Rabbeinu Ephraim. V'nashkei Akarev. And he kisses his feet. Lufisha diber imo tov. Dahayim shebar Ruvain. He comes to a dream to Rabbeinu Ephraim, and he kisses Rabbeinu Ephraim. Why? Mishum shehivlitz olav tov. Because he changes the whole parsha upside down and inside out. And he goes on and he says that the Ramah, who he calls the Baal HaMapa, right, because the Ramah's work was called the Mapa, right, the cloth, the tablecloth on top of the table, Piresh HaPsukim LeToras Ruvein, VeRuvein BeChalom Hichzik Lo Tova. So there's another version here, that Ruvein shows up in a dream, not to Rabbeinu Ephraim, who lived 1,000 years ago, but to the Ramah who lived 500 years ago. So this Rav Stern, oh, it's called Ezra's Torah, if you read it. Right, Ezra's Torah. He's the Rav of Ezra's Torah. He writes that the Alshich testifies about himself that he, the Alshich, used to say over drashos in the name of a certain Chacham, and that Chacham would show up in a dream and tell him, Shehitzil oso mitocha afecha. I guess I don't know what was going on up there in the world, but he saved him. Wow. So, you know, I'm mentioning this to you because this gives a little extra tea as to why we're not really even targeting the parasha. It's really, really something. So we don't realize that when we say over something, you know, it could have an impact. You know, there's a story that Rav Nosson Kamenetsky tells in his book, The Making of a God, about...
It was bad.
About the Baron Cutler. And that's why, one of the reasons it was bad is because of this story. Uh-huh. He tells the story that Rav Baron Cutler had a sister who was... Let's just say she wasn't religious. I won't go into all the details. She was an outstanding mind. And she was writing letters to her brother, Rav Aaron, in Slobodka. And basically the thrust of the letters was, you're one of the greatest minds of our generation. In mathematics, you could be the mathematician of our daughter. Why are you wasting your time in yeshiva? And Rav Nosson tells from his father that Rav Aaron Kotler never got the letters. The letters were intercepted. And finally, when he met his sister, after many, many years of learning yeshiva, his sister said, "This is what you call Judaism? You can't even respond to my letters?" And Rav Aaron turned white, because he didn't know anything about the letters. And he ran to the Altar of Slobodka, and he said, "What's going on?" So the Altar says that had I shown you these letters, you might have just left the yeshiva. So according to the version that Rav Nosson tells, Rav Aaron was so fuming mad that his letters were intercepted that he packed his bags. And the Alter of Slobodka found out, and he ran after him to the train station, and as the train was pulling out, the Alter jumped onto the train and spent hours with Rav Aaron convincing him to come back to the yeshiva. So why do I mention this story? Because this Kevel of Aliatosis reminds us so much of that story. That Yaakov Avinu said, "Wait a minute, don't leave." You know, he saw how insulted Reuven was, how hurt he was, because he was Tovei Elvon Ima. He was able to bring him back. Okay. So yesterday we started a new parak. And I began to realize that we need some sort of introduction to this parak. Because a lot of what we have to know is only to come later on, and we won't know what we're learning now without knowing what's coming later on. So one thing that I mentioned yesterday is the Ramban. I want to review the Ramban with you, and then see if we can a little bit elaborate on this Ramban. The parak starts with two words, B'nei Ha'ir, and then it goes on to the Mechira, and they sold. And the Mishnah is going to talk about selling the Rechova Sho'ir, selling a Beit Knesset. So the Ramban says the following. How do you effectuate this Mechira? So we'll focus our attention on the Beit HaKnesset for a moment. And he writes, Nasal Yidei Shiva Tovei Ha'ir, Ach Lo B'mamod Anshei Ha'ir. Now, Eschatoi Elimaskir, when I read this Ramban, I thought what the Ramban was saying is that it's enough, all you need is the agreement of the Shiva Tuvahir as representatives of the city in order to effectuate the Mechira of the Beit HaKnesset. Meaning, the Beit HaKnesset belongs to the city, and in order to have the agreement of the city to sell the Beit HaKnesset, you need the Shiva Tuvahir. And when he says, Achlo b'maimad anshei ha'ir, I thought the Ramban was meaning that he's alleviating, the thrust of the Ramban is to alleviate the requirement of Maimad Anshei Ha'ir. You don't need the Maimad Anshei Ha'ir. These are the duly elected representatives of the city, the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. And Dasa Genug, that's enough. We don't need any more than that. That's what I thought. But today I'm going to tell you that what I told you is wrong. That's not what the Ramban has in mind. What the Ramban has in mind is that the Mishnah establishes the halacha of Mailin B'Kodesh, V'lo Morivin B'Kodesh. That the money that is given, that is paid for the sale of the Beit HaKnesset, that money has to be invested in a higher Kedusha than, again, whatever the case is, whether it's Rechov or Shalir, but let's talk about Beit HaKnesset, you have to invest it in the Teva. And if you sell the Teva, you have to invest in the Sefer Torah, whatever, you know, the Mitpachos, and so we'll go through the whole Mishnah. So in order to understand this Ramban, what you really have to do is, again, as I told you, this whole sugya is very, very complicated. You can't learn everything at once, but you really have to know everything at once, is take a look at Omar Rava, which is on the bottom of Chavav Amin Aleph. Lo Shanu Ella, two lines up from the bottom of the page. And this Omar Rava really is the key to understanding what's going on over here. Omar Rava Lo Shanu. Now take a look at Rashi, four lines up from the bottom. Lo Shanu di ein moridin bidomim mikdushasam. The halacha that the Mishnah establishes, that the money that accrues from the sale of a Beit HaKnesset has to be pumped into something, invested into something that's on a higher madrig of Kedusha, not a lower madrig of Kedusha. And not only that, but Beit HaKnesset b'chashivuso omeid. Okay, now this is the sugya later on at Daf Kof Zayin. Like I said before, you have to know everything to know anything. The Gemara is going to say that if you sell a Beit HaKnesset, you're still not allowed to use that Beit HaKnesset for certain actions which are considered bizoyon, like to make it into a Beis HaMayim, whatever that means, we'll have to see, or to use it for stables, or whatever the cases are.
Big we'll thing take in Boston, has the community developed, so there was ox bearing, and then Jews moved out of there, and then what were they going to do with the Beit HaKnesset? So then you have to sell, are you going to sell it? How are you going to sell it? What is
right. Right. Very complicated.
Very complicated.
In Chicago, the
very
whole city was split over the issue of selling a Beit Knesset, if you know the history of the time of Rabbi Soloveitchik.
I know.
So the Gemara is going to say on Chav Zayin. Maybe you'll be able to find the Gemara for me.
In Toronto, the shuls became churches.
Yeah, in Brooklyn. Yeah.
Sure, why not?
In Brooklyn,
that's
New York,
good money to take.
There are streets in Brooklyn, New York, where you go from one church to the other, and you look below the Yashkin Pudrik, and you'll see the outline of a Jewish star. Yeah. That's
or Hebrew. Big. Hebrew sometimes you can see on them. You can see Hebrew.
So the Gemara is going to tell us that even after the sale of the Beit Knesset, see if you can find this on Chof Zion, which I don't find it right now. There are four categories. I'll read it to you. Oh, it's Chof Zion on the bed. The Chachamim Omer, maybe it's in the Mishnah. Is there a Mishnah on Chof Zion?
Yeah.
Again, I apologize, I'm not able to learn all these plot, you know, from one day to the other. I'm also learning a few other things. Memkar olam chutz. Now the word memkar olam means that the buyer can, you know, purchase the Beit Knesset, can use it for whatever he wants. Chutz, and there are four categories. You can't use it for a bursiki, a tanning, a tanner's place, tevila, beis hamayim, and a merchatz. So you can't make a bathhouse out of the shul. So on that rava, getting back to Chavav and Aleph, says the following: Lo shanu, all these dinim that A, the monies have to be used for a high level of kedusha, like you're going to buy a table, or the Beit HaKnesset itself is not allowed to be desecrated even after the sale. That's only shalo machru shiva tuvei ha'ir b'maimad anshei ha'ir. Avo machru shiva tuvei ha'ir b'maimad anshei ha'ir. Is a fil lemishta beishikra. You're allowed to make it into a brewery or perhaps a place where they drink beer. Shaper dummy, it's okay.
What changes that now for some synagogues?
What do you say?
It's for drinking beer with our alcohol. Like what change? Like that's what a lot of shuls are like.
That's what the shul was for to be doing.
This actually translates it, and so I'm guessing they base it on something that you're actually buying beer and drinking the beer. You're not actually making a place to drink beer, but you're actually
and you're allowed to. Why? Because it was sold by Shiva Tuveir Bimaimad Anshayayir. Now watch it. There are two conditions here that have to be met. But once those conditions are met, then forget about our whole Mishnah, says Rava. Our whole Mishnah, which again, if you take our Mishnah together in conjunction with the next Mishnah, it comes to the following. That when you celebrate Knesset, then A, the Beit Knesset remains to some extent in its Kedusha, maintains its Kedusha, and there are four different categories of activities that are prohibited. And number two, the monies that are received for the sale of the Beit Knesset are also Kadosh. And Adarav, Milo Kadosh, you have to use it for something even greater Kedusha. Says Rava, that whole discussion that you're learning in this Mishnah, that whole halacha, only applies because this was sold through some other method. Other than Shiva Tuveir B'Maimad Anshayayir, two conditions here. Number one, so when the Ramban is telling us the following, that how did they effectuate the Mechira in our situation, and it was not a complete Mechira, if I could use that term, meaning it wasn't enough of Mechira to completely nullify the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses, right? So the answer is, why wasn't it enough? Because you only had it was only B'maimad Shiva Tuveir, but it wasn't B'maimad Anshayayir. If it had been both A plus B, if the sale was effectuated both by the Shiva Tuveir and B'maimad Anshayayir, that would be an absolute Mechira. The Beis Knesset loses its status as Kedusha, make it into a brewery, you know, a drink beer, whatever it is. And not only that, the monies don't have to be used in any particular way. Go spend the money on anything you want. Why? Because you have both conditions met. But in our Mishnah, which means that the Kedusha was not nullified, or not completely nullified at least, that's because you were missing one of these two conditions. And the Ramban says, which condition were you missing? B'maimad anshei ha'ir. All you had was the tuvei ha'ir, the shiva tuvei, you didn't have maimad anshei ha'ir. Now again, what we're going to have to do here, and I'm not sure I'm ready for it yet, because again, this is a very complicated sugya, we're going to have to figure out what these two conditions mean. And obviously, each condition is going to bring us closer to a full-fledged Mechira, but only when we have both conditions met do we have a full-fledged Mechira. And again, when I use the term full-fledged Mechira, don't misunderstand me. I'm not talking about Choshev Mishpat. There's no such thing as, Choshev Mishpat, either she's pregnant or she's not pregnant. You know what I'm saying? It's either a Mechira or it's not a Mechira. But in Hilchus Mechira's Beis HaKnesses, there are going to be two levels of Mechira. There's going to be the absolute Mechira, which means that the Beis HaKnesses loses its entire status. The Domin that you receive from the sale have no status whatsoever. That's going to be, in my terminology, until I get a better terminology as we go along, I'm going to call that a complete Mechira, that completely obliterates any status to the Beis HaKnesses. And then you have this incomplete Mechira, which is enough to allow you to sell the Beis HaKnesses, but it's not enough to completely remove the Kiddush of the Beis HaKnesses. I mean, let me give you a mashal of my Dovr Doma. We have something called Psulei HaMukdashim. So let's say I have an animal that's Kodesh L'Mizbeah, and it gets a mum. So Allah is, now I can be poetry. You know, Kedusha Zaguf doesn't lend itself to pigeon. The only pigeon that we have is in Kedusha's Domin. But in this case, where it had a mum, I could be poetry. But that pigeon is only a partial pigeon. I mean, the Kedusha of the Karban is not completely nullified, because it's still also in something called Giza Vavoda. So for example, after the pigeon, I can check the animal and eat it. But if I want to shear off its wool, right? If it's a sheep, that I can't do. So you see that there's such a concept called pidyon b'miktzas, where the kedusha still, we would say, if you were Hasidic, you'd say shirayim. There's still shirayim with the kedusha left, or in Yiddish you would say blighted. We still have some leftover of kedusha. And that's the subject of our Mishnah, that since in our Mishnah there were no two conditions, the two conditions for a complete Mechira were not met, and then the Ramban is going to say, well, how can they sell the Beit Knesset if you don't have these conditions met? And here's where the Ramban comes up with his thesis, that as long as you have Shiva Tu Ve'ir, that's enough to allow you to sell the Beit Knesset, but it's only a Miktas Pinyon. It's not a complete Pinyon, and the Kedusha still inheres in the Beis HaKnesses, and certainly in the Domin. And that's going to generate two nafkaminas. Number one, what do you do with the Domin? We have to be milder the Kodesh and not more the Kodesh. Number two, what's the status of the Beit HaKnesses in the hands of the buyer? And the answer is that as far as the buyer is concerned, he has to realize that he is buying a Beit HaKnesses. Now, it doesn't mean that it still has the Kedusha of Beit HaKnesses, but there's Shirayim of that Kedusha. And that Shirayim generates an Iser in four different categories of activities which are being, or which will be prohibited in that basis. And that's all because you only had a heter mechira, pardon that term, that sounds more like Shemiras Bisman Hazeh, right? But you had a green light to sell the Beit HaKnesset, and that's based on Shiva Tu Ve'ir, says Ramban, but you didn't have a full-fledged mechira that would effectuate a complete pidyon, because you were missing the second condition, namely what? The Maimon Anshei Ha'ir.
So
then we're going to have to try to work this out, but just show you how complex and silly it is.
The Anshei Ha'ir and the seven
Tuvei,
essentially the board of the town, I guess.
Right, the trustees. I don't know what they call them.
The trustees, they each it sounds like neither has complete authority. And since if one of them chooses to sell without the approval of the other, then what they basically have done is they've sold it, but since they don't have the approval of the other, whatever they sold can't completely,
the Kedusha cannot be completely right. Removed.
So that could, but as long as you're using it, the money to buy something of a higher level of Kedusha, and as long as it doesn't go to complete, desecration, then you could assume that the use would be approved by the other side. Because how could they complain about buying a Torah if you so? In other words, how people
that I don't know.
I'm just saying.
Right. I don't know enough about that. I'm pleading the fifth here because that's information I don't have yet. But I agree with everything you say until that last line, because I don't know if the last line is correct or not. Fair. I'm not saying I disagree with you. I just don't know. But everything else you said is correct. That. In terms of selling the Beit HaKnesset, that's one thing. And then if you talk about whether the sale itself is a pidyon and it removes the Kedusha, that's a whole different thing. And the Ramban is going to say that the Maimon Anshei Ha'ir is absolutely necessary to complete this kinyon in such a way that it's a pidyon gomur. removing all the Kedusha, but in the absence of Maimon Tekancha Yir, we're going to allow you to sell the Beis HaKnesses based on the Shiva Tuvah Yir. So that's just a head to Mechira, as I said before, to permit the sale of a Beit HaKnesset, and then we have to meet up with the conditions, because although you sold the Beit HaKnesset still remains, to some extent, the Beit HaKnesset. But what we're going to have to figure out is how these two conditions operate. And I don't know if it has to do with, like you said, the assumptions that I thought that they would agree. I don't know. That I think is way beyond.
You have to find Maimon Anshei Yir, what they are, who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to talk about Maimon Anshei Yir. Okay. Now, again, keep in mind that the first line in the Gemara here, who are the Bnei Yir who are selling the Rechov HaShokir? So take a look again. I'm fast forwarding to the first line of that Gemara in Chavav. And the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, oh, okay, I'm sorry. This is going to be a discussion about Rechov HaShokir, whether Rechov HaShokir actually is sanctified. That's Machlokas Tanoim. And then what we're going to get to here is Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. Let's take a look if we can find that. That's about, let's say, 10 lines down from the top of the page, or 8 lines, 9 lines down from the beginning of the Gemara. Do you have that? Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omar Rav Yonason, Lo Shanu. Now here, Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni is going back to basics. And he's asking the following question: are you allowed to sell a Beit HaKnesset? And he's saying, Lo Pashut. And here he makes a distinction between two categories of Beit HaKnesset. He says there's a Beit HaKnesset Shel Kfarim, and then there's a Beit HaKnesset Shel Krochim. This is the only overlap between our parak and Masechta Megillah, meaning Purim. So there are two types of Batei Knesiot. There's a Beit Knesset of the Kfarim, right? That these are smaller towns. Now, the assumption here is that a small town, Beit Knesset, is meant to service the people in that town, and only the people in that town. And then we have something called the Beit Knesset Shel Krochim, which is open to the entire world. In other words, I could live on the other side of the globe and yet still have rights to the Beit Knesset that's in a krach halfway across the globe. You know, I live in Australia. It takes me 26 hours by plane to get to Yerushalayim. And yet, there's a Beit Knesset in Yerushalayim, and as an Australian Jew, I have rights to that Beit Knesset. And therefore, lo motzi mizavni leh. There's no way that you can sell such a Beit Knesset. Why? Tahavali de Rabin. Now, I'm going to take a shot at this, that I don't think the word Rabin should be translated literally. I mean, it's owned by the manyfold, right? In other words, we're not just jacking up the numbers here, that the people of the Kfar, the population of the Kfar is 1,000, but the population of the Krach is 50,000. I don't think that's what we mean by Rabin. Rabin means the entire Knesset Yisrael. Every single Jew, no matter where he is on the face of the earth, he has rights to that Beit Knesset. So how could you ever get the agreement? And I would even go beyond that. If you would get the signature on a petition from every last Jew on the world, you know, on the face of the globe, that we're going to sell a Beit Knesset Shel Krochim, you still could not sell a Beit Knesset Shel Krochim. Again, everything I'm telling you is the Ravon Mugbal. I have no idea if what I'm telling you is correct or not. We're really going to have to figure it out. But what I'm suggesting is that a Beit Knesset Shel Rabin, which is called in the language of the Gemara Beit Knesset Shel Krochim, cannot be sold, period. It can't be sold even in the minimalist sale, meaning the minimalist sale of our Mishnah, which is a sale that only effectuates a partial pigeon on the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesset. Even that level of a sale cannot be achieved in the case of a Beit Knesset Shel Krochim. Why? Because who's going to sell the Beit Knesset? No one has the rights to sell the Beit Knesset. Now again, I'm not learning Bnei Yir. This is the first time in my life I'm learning Bnei Yir. But I can tell you one thing. There's a perek called Yesh Nochlim at the end of Bava Basra, towards the end of Bava Basra. And the Gemara wants to know the following. A Sefer Torah was stolen. And we accuse Ploni Almoni of being the gossip. So we need two witnesses to testify against him that he was the one who stole the Sefer Torah. So the Gemara says that no one could testify on this ganav, because they're all nogeh b'davar.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm suggesting is that the Sefer Torah, like our Beit Knesset here, is owned by the entire public. And if it's owned by the entire public, it would be like if I would testify against you that you stole something from me. I'm no gev alias. I can't testify about my own possession, that you stole my possession. So why am I mentioning this Gemara Bavasa? Because I think it gives us a little bit of a mirror image of some object of sanctity that's owned by the entire community. And therefore, because of that possession, no one could testify about that object. The Gemara says, oh, here, I just reminded myself of the Gemara's language. The Gemara says, L'salku betrei, means that two people who have testimony to give against the gospel could be masalik themselves from the Sefer Torah. And again, I'm not going into detail how that operates. But apparently, L'salku betrei, Let two people who have testimony, they saw the Gazlon, let them remove themselves from the Sefer Torah. They could be Mafkia or Mafkir.
They don't own the Sefer Torah anymore. They have no.
Again, why is the word Siluk and not Hefker? Because when you're talking about an ownership that's not private, but rather it's a public ownership, you can't be Mafkir something that you don't own. You only own it insofar as you're part of this entire entity. But what you can do is remove yourself from the tzibur as far as the ownership of the Sefer Torah. So I'm thinking to myself that maybe that's what the Gemara is talking about, Ravashi, that with regard to a Sefer, to a Beit HaKnesset, shall krach him, that's already owned by the Ganz Tzibur. And therefore no one has the rights to say that we can sell the Sefer Torah. I will tell me each one sign the petition, I'm willing to sell the Sefer Torah, or the Beit HaKnesset. The answer is no, you don't even have those rights, because the rights belong to a collective entity, which is, you know, you've heard of Gestalt psychology, right? There's a famous sentence that goes, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. In the case of something that's owned by the entire Klal Yisrael, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So, for example, Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbe, was opposed to Mechira, the Mechira, the head of Mechira. Why? And some people wanted to say that's why he never became chief rabbi of Israel, because he couldn't accept the Mechira. I don't know if that's true or not true, but why was he so opposed to the Mechira of Eretz Yisrael? Because Rav Soloveitchik felt that if you would get every single farmer or every citizen in the country of Israel to sign a document that he's selling his portion in Eretz Yisrael, the sale would be invalid. It's worthless. No one's owns Eretz Yisrael. Not you, not me, not him, and not the whole conglomeration of the entire tzibur living alive in that day. I remember he used to say the Knesset Yisrael is a metaphysical entity that spans all generations. So I'm saying the same thing about Beis HaKnesset. Perhaps that's why there's no Mechira. Now, after we get to Beit Knesset shall kfarim, that's already a privately owned Beit Knesset. Now, when you talk about a privately owned Beit Knesset, you can get together the entire city, against a small city called a kfar. And what do we have to do to effectuate this kingdom? So here I think the Rabban is saying there are two different levels. There's level number one, where the two Be'er sell the thing, and then there's level number two, where it's not only two Be'er, but it's also the B'mayim and Anshei Be'er. And once you have both conditions,
how's
there
enough in a kfar and a kfar in this sense? How's there enough in it?
Because you're not allowed to come into the Beit Knesset of a kfar unless we invite you in.
Really?
So the members of the kfar, they can decide who's going to go into the Beit Knesset and not. You're a visitor? Okay, we'll give you visiting rights. So sit in the visiting section.
Or maybe...
That's all the Beit Knesset shall krachim. Anyone, any Jew on the face of the earth has the right to go into that Beit Knesset. He owns part of that Beit Knesset, because the Beit Knesset belongs to the entire tzibur of Klal Yisrael.
More that they're not expecting visitors to come. And therefore,
the
understanding when they built it was that this is not open to anybody, whereas in the city they built to expect it. But couldn't they then put a condition when they build it and say, when they buy land, saying, okay, this is ours, and anybody who comes and visits...
That's another cool sugyo. The tie works in a Beit Knesset.
Just because it's... I'm sorry, I still don't think. Just because it's
very
a city.
Slow.
And this happens. It's because it's a city, alright? So why can't I say, okay, this city of Beit Shemesh, it's a city. It's big enough for a city, but we're not letting anybody else into Beit Shemesh. And we decided this big city, we're not letting anybody else in the city. So
So that could be Tanai. That's what Eric is saying. But in the absence of a Tanai, when the city builds a Beit Knesset, it's built on behalf of all the clubs.
So why
then anyone could come?
Why is the Kfar the same thing? You're building this show.
Kfar is a private thing. Like the Gemara is going to say later on that they, even in the city, you could have a privately owned Beit Knesset. How? The Gemara says that they were tanners. And again, it's a little embarrassing to say this, but the tanners had a bad smell. So what they did was, because people didn't want to allow them in the small towns to join them, they established their own Beit Knesset. So Gemara says that they have rights to sell that Beit Knesset if they want to. Why? Because that's a Beit Knesset that was privately owned by the tanners union.
But
the Gemara can even say that Rav Ashi himself built a private Beit Knesset. And the people of the neighborhood agreed that he would decide whether to sell the Beit Knesset, and he was allowed to sell it because he was considered the exclusive owner of the Beit Knesset. Again, when you say ownership, it doesn't mean he pockets the money, but what it means is that he has the determination whether it will remain a Beit Knesset or be sold to something else. And if it's sold to something else, then what's going to happen is that in certain cases, the sale will be absolute, which means that the buyer can take that Beit Knesset and do whatever he wants with it. Like I said before, he can drink beer at a beer party. And in other cases, we're going to require, like in the case of Kfarim, we're going to require that the city sell the Beit Knesset. Again, when I say the city, I mean the Kfar itself, as opposed to a craft, which cannot even be sold. So again, what you mentioned before, John, about Roxbury and all these issues about selling a Beit Knesset, probably, well, it depends whose side of the argument I am, but on one side of the argument, the opponents, you know, the dissenting view, would reflect the fact that it was a Beit Knesset shel kruch. Now again, I don't know if it means how where's it located and how many people live in the craft, I don't know. But the concept in abstract terms of Beit Knesset shel kruch means that this is a regular Beit Knesset that invites and is open to the entire public. So that any dues I pay to the Beit Knesset are not acquisition fees, meaning I'm not acquiring the Beit Knesset. Even, let's say you have one Nadvan, you know, who's very wealthy, he puts down millions of dollars to build the Beit Knesset, and he doesn't own the Beit Knesset because the Beit Knesset still profit. All the monies now, let's say for example, if I pay membership dues, that's only for the function of what goes on in the Beit Knesset, but not for the ownership of the Beit Knesset itself.
So, two questions on that. First of all, the Beit Knesset of the crop, if you, it still sounds like this mission would apply, where it could be sold, it's just you don't have the approval. You know, if the...
Where is the Kfar now? Well, Kruch.
That the trustees could sell it, it's just that this mission would apply because they can't get approval of everyone, since it's considered to be kind of owned by the general public, not by... But you still would have the trustees.
I'm looking at the line in the Gemara. Maybe we have to reinterpret this line, Eric, according to you. But it says, Lo Motzi Mizvan Eilei. Do you see that?
Where is it? Which way?
This is about 10 lines down from the top of the Vavav of an Aleph.
Yeah.
You see where it says, Lo Motzi Mizvan Eilei? So I got the impression it means it cannot be sold, period. I don't know. We have to see what that means.
Okay.
I have a footnote here, but in the footnote he just tells you to look at the Ramban. So I don't have the Ramban. I don't know.
But do they have no right to sell it, or do they have no right to sell it completely?
Well, again, then you're in trouble here, because if you're going to sell...
Because then they can contract others, they can...
Because even the case of Bnei Kfarim, what we said in the Bnei Kfarim in our Mishnah, right? Remember that Rav says our Mishnah is talking about an incomplete sale.
Right. So why couldn't they have an incomplete sale? Well, the trustees sell it without the...
But again, isn't it even part of our Mishnah? Just one second... Yeah, lo shanu. What does lo shanu mean?
I don't know.
Lo shanu. I keep going back. Lo shanu. You see that 10 lines down from the top? What do those two words lo shanu mean?
Lo shanu.
I thought lo shanu was going back on our Mishnah.
No.
Now keep in mind that our Mishnah is talking about an incomplete sale of what?
Right.
So I don't know, but it seems like from the Gemara here of Rav Shmuel Rashi, it's an incomplete sale of Beit Knesset Shel Kfarim. So in the case of a Beit Knesset Shel Kfarim, you have Tzvei Din, you have two different laws. You have one law if everybody is involved, meaning both the two Be'ir and the Bnei Ya'ir, right? And that's an incomplete sale. Our mission is talking about an incomplete sale, which is effectuated by the Tuve Shiva Tuve Yir without the Maimon of Anshei Yir. And on that Mishnah, Rav Shmuel, in the name of Rav Yonasan, makes the following comment that this whole discussion about a Mechira is, which again, Rav says is about a Mechira, an incomplete Mechira, right? Because there were no Anshei Maimon. That whole discussion revolves around a Beit Knesset Shel Kfarim. So in the case of Beit Knesset Shel Kfarim, you could have two types of Mechira. You could have an incomplete Mechira and a complete Mechira.
I'm having problems with this, because what you're saying, either a Tanai works, there's some method of
sale,
or you just abandon it and say, well, it's a synagogue still.
Right.
And we're leaving. And somebody else is going, you know, the church is going to take it over, but you can still call it a synagogue and show up and try and daven shacharis there.
Okay. So, Eric, give me a little bit more time. As I said to you, it's a very, you know, it's a sugya that goes on and on and on, and we're getting little bits and pieces. Right. We have 5 minutes left. Let's just take the 5 minutes and go through the mission. At least we can say we're going to see him on the mission. Okay, so again, the Mishnah is talking about what I call an incomplete sale. It's a partial sale. We were allowed to sell the Beit Knesset. We had enough of a green light, a license to sell the Beit Knesset, but the sale is what I call a partial pidyon. Now, how does the partiality of the pidyon express itself? So he says the following: Bnei Ya'ir shemachru rechova shel ir is then lochim b'dova beis haKnesses. Beis HaKnesses lochim bidomav, I'm adding that word, teva. Teva lochim bidomav mitpachos. And mitpachos yikhu sparmen. And we're always going up one madriga. So let's go over it. We're going from Rehovah Shalir up to Beis HaKnesses, from Beis HaKnesses to a teva, from a teva to mitpachos, from mitpachos to Sfarim, and from Sfarim to a Sefer Torah. And now the Mishnah goes in reverse, is prohibited. Avol in the reverse, Machu Sefer Torah, lo yichu Sfarim. Sfarim means Nach, Nevim Uksumim, which have a lower condition than a Sefer Torah. Sfarim lo yichu Mitpachos, right, this is the mantle that covers the Sefer Torah, because the Mitpachos has a higher, just 1 second, yeah, the Mitpachos has a... What did we just say? We said that Mipachos... Just give me a second. Sorry. Mipachos has a higher level of Kedusha than Sfarim. So what is he doing now? He's selling...
Mipachos is lower.
It's lower than Sfarim. It was lower than
Sfarim. It's higher than
Teva. Let me go through one more time. So again, you take a Teva, you sell a Teva, you're allowed to sell a Teva for Mipachos, because that's called Milan Makodesh, correct? Mm-hmm. So now what is he doing? He's taking now Sfarim, which has a lower level of Kedusha. He's not allowed to buy Mitpachos.
No, his Sfarim have a higher level of Kedusha. If you sold Mitpachos, you could buy Sfarim. Mitpachos.
Oh, right. So Mitpachos. Mitpachos has a higher level than Teva. And then we're saying that Sfarim has a higher level than Mitpachos. Sorry. And Sfarim has a higher level than Mitpachos. So therefore, if you want to sell Sfarim, you'd be going down in Madrig if you bought Mitpachos. And Mitpachos lo yichu teva, right? That if you're selling Mitpachos, then what? Lo yichu teva, because what did we just establish in the ratio that teva has a higher level of kedusha than mitpachos?
No, lower. Teva, you can buy mitpachos.
So if you sell a teva, you can buy mitpachos. So mitpachos is a higher level than teva, and therefore, if you're selling mitbachos, then you're going down a madriga by buying a teva, you're lowering it, and that ain't morita b'kodesh, and teva lo yikhu beis kneses, right, because once again you're lowering the level of kedusha, beis kneses lo yikhu rechov
hashayim. The fact that this second part of the Mishnah
just like
exists,
that two words.
The fact that the second part of the Mishnah exists suggests that you can buy equal.
Correct. That's going to be the steer between the Reisha and the Seifa. The Reisha seems to assume you can only buy something that's on a higher level of Kedusha. The Seifa assumes you're not allowed to buy something with a lower level of Kedusha. How do we fit in that middle, law of excluded middle called the Shavah Meshavah? And just the last two words of the Mishnah, V'chein bim mosro seihem. In other words, let's say they only used part of the damim to buy whatever they did. So let's say, for example, they sold Sifrei Nevi'im and Ksumim, and they used part of the damim to buy a Sefer Torah. They now have some leftover surplus money.
The change is going to be on the level.
So the surplus money also has the same status as the original purchase. And he says, it's not enough to pay lip service, and you bought something that has a high level of Kedusha. Right, because you sold Sifrei Nevi'im Uksumim, and Lo Yiknu Me'am Mosar Davash Kedusha Subchusa. You can't buy Mitpachos, which has a low level of Kedusha, than Nevi'im Uksumim, even with the surplus money, and we're still going to apply Ma'al B'Kodesh Lo Morin B'Kodesh to the surplus money as well. So we get it tomorrow. Hopefully I'll be a little bit more intelligent. I'll be a little bit more hungry because I really need breakfast. But hopefully we'll be able to make some progress. Okay, then. So you have to bear with me here. I'm looking for a safer that'll give me sort of like an overview, and I haven't yet found it. You know, so I'll mention him in a safer by Rabbi Yenak called Shirei Rav. He has a whole discussion about which kedusha is greater, based on essence or based on medrash. That's a long discussion, but that's not going to help me at this point in my life.
So when talking about sfarim, I'm guessing it's talking about clock, with, you know, like kosher sfarim on the clock,
right?
Or does it
clock
include like what we use in
the veal, dio, all the
conditions
have to be met.
Is there any kosher to the sfarim that we use today?